all around would have given up a hand up. And this is based on something you've learned. A lot of times people ask us, what's the point of learning this? We're never going to use it in real life. And Rabbi Jaffe, who's also a teacher here, but is rabbi of a shul in Edison. Okay. In Edison, and he said, math is everywhere. And I told him what we were learning, and he came up with like 6 Gemaras, and he said, this is where it is, and we can talk about how relevant it is. Maybe not in today's day and age, because you just Google, what's the answer? But when the rabbis, many, many years ago, were talking about it, and they used what you are learning today, or what you've been learning over the course of this year, and they came up with this, and you're going to see the relevance as you go through. I'm going to be right next door.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Did I bring a copy of the handout? Okay, so my name is Rabbi Jaffe. Mr. Bernath asked me to come and talk to you guys. It's a class that I've been given. Last year we did it. I did it this year as well. I think they're calling it the Circle of Life Integration Presentation on Talmud and Mathematics. So I just wanted to share with you that a lot of things that we're learning, as Mrs. Cash has said, kids ask, you know, does this ever come up in real life? And I want to show you how... Bottom line, halakha l'maisa, this stuff is real and it comes up a lot. So let me just ask you, you know, I'll throw it out there. Every Yom Tov we have has a different mitzvah that's associated with it, right? Symbolism. If I asked you for Pesach, so what's your gut reaction? I tell you Pesach, you tell me what mitzvah? Matzah. So what's matzah symbolize to you? What's the symbolism behind eating some flat bread? Poor bread, lechem oni, good. What else? Yetziat Mitzrayim, it's symbolic of, right, this is what we ate. Either we ate the bread in Mitzrayim that way, or this is what we baked when we couldn't have enough time to do it. What about if I ask you for Rosh Hashanah? So what's the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah?
Shofar.
So what's a shofar represent? Crying. Yeah, crying. Yavava, good. What else?
Expressing your feelings towards God without words.
Beautiful. A tefillah without any limitations of words, because a word can only take me so far. When I define something, when I look and I say, this is a desk... So it just became a desk, and it's not a bottle of water. When you define something, you've by definition limited. You have to, because you have to talk about things. But tefillah, shofar, is a vehicle for tefillah without any words. I called out from that small end of the shofar, and it's expansive on the other end. It's a vehicle of prayer. Chanukah. What is the mitzvah of Chanukah? Menorah, obviously, right? So I want to show you. It turns out that it's this week's Parsha. In Parshas Emor, we discuss the mitzvah of the menorah is mentioned again. What's the symbolism behind the menorah? How is the menorah shaped? A quick question. We know we had one branch in the middle and we had 6 on the other sides. Were the 6 branches, were they curved or were they slanted? Show of hands, how many think they actually were curved? No one? No one? Just you? You're Rashi. Everyone else, I'm assuming, is the Rambam. The Rambam holds the paskins that they are. You'll see nowadays when people light the menorahs, Lubavitchers make the, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You're driving around, you see like the, you know, the portable menorahs on top of the car. I tried to get one this year, my class, Baruch Hashem for 12T. They were going to surprise me and buy me like one of those like Chanukah menorahs you could strap on the car. So like they Googled it and they're pricing it out for me. So, but unfortunately, I drive on the Garden State Parkway. There's a limit to how fast you're allowed to drive with a menorah on your car. So they didn't get it for me, but the thought was definitely there, you know? Okay, watch this. What's the symbolism behind the menorah? That one branch in the center is Torah. And all other branches that come out from the Torah are the chochmas, are wisdoms of the world. And the Rishonim already say this. The Rishonim say that all forms of knowledge are really based upon attached to that center, which is the Torah. So I'll share with you a few different grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, music, my personal favorite, geometry, and astronomy. Those are the 7 different branches of wisdom that come. It's on the sheet, so I'm just in my notes. But those are the 7 different branches, but it all comes from the Torah. You know, there's a famous... Have you guys heard of the Chazon Ish? You ever heard of right? You ever heard of him? No? So it's worthwhile for me to come today just to explain to you who the Chazon Ish was. One of the greatest rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, originally from Europe, and he made Aliyah. At the time he was bar mitzvah. At bar mitzvah, he took a neder. What's a neder?
Promise.
It's an oath. Now, he waited until he was bar mitzvah, because you take a neder before your bar mitzvah, before you're a gadol, so it doesn't count. So he waited until his neder would really count and have some, you know, halachic punch to it, and he said, I'm only going to learn Torah. I'm not going to look into secular textbooks or anything like that. and he kept that way for the rest of his life. He came to Eretz Yisrael and he sat in the Beis Medrash 20 years, nobody even knew who he was. And after a while, he started realizing, oh my goodness, we have a gadol amongst us. And as he rose in I'll call it fame, people found out who he was. People, doctors started approaching him with their medical questions. So it sounds very counterintuitive, right? The rabbi who's never opened a medical textbook up in his life, and surgeons are coming to him. And we have a diagram, a picture that the Chazon Ish drew for these surgeons, how to make a brain surgery. You know, like you cut here, and then you hang over right over here. Right? He drew a diagram out for them, the man who never opened up a thing. How did he do this? Because it's the menorah. And when you're connected to the center, you're connected to the branch of Torah, all other fields of wisdom are open and accessible to you as well. So the Chazon Ish had this type. Now again, that's one in a generation, but just to show you, in our own life, I think he passed away in the 1953, check my dates, but I think that was, so it's not too long ago, we had somebody on this earth who had that type of knowledge and connection to the Torah. One more quote from the Vilna Gaon. He writes in the introduction, the Gra, do you guys remember the Cramer's theorem? You ever heard of that in math? No? I'm getting like some blank stares. You remember the Cramer's theorem? The Cramer's theorem was written by the Vilna Gaon. His last name was Eliyahu Cramer. So he wrote that. He writes, in geometry, every measure of knowledge that one's missing in Torah, wait, I missed a line. It's in math. Okay, I'm totally misquoting this. But if you miss that, then your lack of knowledge in Torah is 100-fold. That if you're missing something in this perspective. So again, enough of an introduction to show a little bit how math is important and how it's connecting. But let's get into that for a second. Okay. Before rulers were invented, how'd you measure distance? Feet? Feet as in your foot or as in your foot? Your foot. Is what I mean. Okay, that's true. They use body parts. So when the Gemara wants to give us measurements for an object, it will use things. Do you know what a tefach is?
Yeah.
What's a tefach? Your fist, right? So, okay, hold up the fist. Show me the fist. I don't see your fist. Thank you. How many inches is your fist? How many inches is a tefach? About three, maybe even more, maybe up to four. So depending on how many tefachim there are, you have, how many inches it is, that's going to make a big difference. And I'm going to show you this morning about halachos that depend on an actual tefach, that fist size, and it'll make a very big difference whether it's 3 inches or 4 inches. What's another body part that we use for measuring besides the tefach? We use an amma. What's an amma on your body? Right, it's from your elbow all the way up to the end of your hand, to your middle finger. So, how many tefachim go into an amma? Tell you guys, everyone measure your elbow right now. Tell me how many tefachim you think go into it. One, two, three.
Four?
Oh, four, too small. Five? I got four, I got five. Any other numbers? Certainly not three. The Gemara says six. The Gemara tells that there are six tefachim in an amma. So now higher math. Here we go. If there's 3 inches in a tefach, how much is an amma? 18. And if there are 4 inches in a tefach, then an amma is 24, 2 feet. So more or less, we're going to use that phrase of dalad amos a lot. Four amos in modern day measurements. This comes up a lot of times. Where would be an example you need to know dalad amos?
Kippa?
Erev, okay. You ever heard of mezuzah? A room has to be dalad amos. Dalad amos, in order to be chayav and mezuzah. If you have a little closet, right? It's not chayav and mezuzah. Ramosha holds that dalad amos nowadays in modern measures is 7 feet 3 inches, depending on how you do. I have these in industry. The Chazon Ish, who we just quoted a few minutes ago, says a tefach is 3.8 inches and amos 22.8 inches. Okay, different measurements that we can use for that. They used body parts because it was just so practical. You didn't have to carry around. You know, you didn't have your phone that could download an app that had like a ruler on it for you. But you had your body parts with you. So you wanted to measure something, you used the human body in order to determine how this comes up. Okay, let's move now to someone said Erevin, right? What's your name?
Noam.
Shalom, Noam. Where are you from?
Fairlawn.
Do you know Rabbi Yudin?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Ashrech v'tov lach. Rabbi Yudin is a tzaddik. You davened in the shul?
No, but I know.
Why not? Okay, I won't take it personally that you don't daven by Rabbi Yudin, but just You should know you have a tzaddik living amongst you. All right, here we go. Back to the story. Chavra, in Fairlawn, is there an Erev? Yes, there is. Who checks it? I don't know nowadays, but I remember I was there. What? You don't know. So there is an Erev that's checked. I can't tell you who does it nowadays, but I'll tell you like this. What does an Erev accomplish? According to Halacha, what do we make an Erev? What can you do if you have an Erev? You can carry. Why can't I carry if there's no Erev?
Because you're not in an enclosed space.
You're not in an enclosed space. Excellent. What I do halakhically by enclosing in the city, I turn it into one large room, one large space. If there's not an Erev outside, I could carry anything I want from this end to that end. If I'm outdoors, I can't pick up a sefer and carry it from here to there. You're not allowed to move Dalet Amos. You're not allowed to carry an object in the public, Dalet Amos, which we said, using Ramosha's definition, an Amma, right, from here to here, four of those, 7 feet, 3 inches. I can't carry this sefer 7 feet, 3 inches in public if there's not an Erev. If there is an Erev, okay, great. So then now I'm totally enclosed in, and I can carry it as far as I want. Am I allowed to go beyond the Erev? Sure, quiet. I got to know, right? What's your name?
Me?
You.
I'm Allie.
Allie. Are you allowed to go beyond the Erev?
No.
How many agree with Allie? How many disagree with Allie? Asaf, you disagree?
Yeah.
You say what? You say you can, yes, go outside the Erev?
If you're not holding anything.
If I'm not holding anything, I can just walk. Can I just walk and walk and walk and walk and walk?
No, you can't go.
You can't go too far. You can't go 2,000 amos outside of the end. That's why I'm sure a lot of you guys go up to camp in the summer, right? Yes? No? Maybe so? Okay, so I was in Lavi for many years. And the question came on Shabbos, could you walk from Lavi to Morasha on Shabbos afternoon, not carrying anything, right? The answer is no, because it's outside of the Erev and you have a limited distance. You're only allowed to travel 2,000 amos outside of the Erev and you have to stop. Now, here's the opposite side. Let's say you're running late on an Erev Shabbos. You're running late and you want to know, if I can get into the city, I'm great. What if I'm not sure if I get even within, let's say, okay, imagine here's my Rambam here, this is like a safer bird's eye view. So if I can get within 2,000 amos of that city, then I'm in, and then I can walk anywhere I want within there. If I'm in a building for Shabbos, I get 2,000 amos outside of the building. Let's say, what room is this? Room 39? You know, it's a holy number, 39, Lama Tes Melachas. Big zechus to be in room 39. So what? So if this room was somehow transplanted in the middle of an open field, you'd be able to walk 2,000 amos beyond the border of the doorway. If you're in a field by yourself, if you're just in an open field, how far do you get? What would you say? What? You get Dalet Amos. You get your 7 feet, 3 inches in one direction. That's where you are for Shabbos. So now I'm coming late. Let's turn to the first source on the packet. I'm going to show you some Gemaras now. Yeah, everyone has? This is a Gemara in Erevin, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. If you can get within 2,000 feet of the city, the Tchum Shabbos, then that's your location. You're allowed to walk throughout the whole city on Shabbos. You're like an inhabitant. The story is, when Rav Gamliel, they were on a boat, and they weren't sure how far away they were from the city as it's getting dark on Friday afternoon. So look at what he says. You see where it's boxed off? I appreciate whoever made up these sheets. Tanu Shofer Shaisul Rav Gamliel. Right? He had a special type of tube. Shahaya Mabit Vitsoifibo Alpaim Amma Vyabasha. He could use it to measure Alpaim Amma, 2,000 Amos, Uknegda Alpaim Bayam, and he could do this on the 2,000. So he had a special like of protractor, so to speak. That's not the best word, but he had this tube that you could look at. And he'd be able to tell when he's on the boat, depending on the angle that he looked through it. Lenses were not invented yet. Lenses, I don't think, were invented until like the 1400s. But it was a special designated way of looking and seeing based upon the angle of the tube, whether he was in. You follow the hypotenuse, right, the triangle, and you see, were you within the 2,000 amos or not? Look on the right side for a second. This is taken from Rabbi Steinsaltz Gemara. You see Rabbi Gamliel's tube? Look what I'm pointing right here. I apologize, I don't have like an overhead, but I'm looking at the top right corner. According to the Gaonim in the Rambam, Rabban Gamliel's tube refers to a geometrical measuring implement. It was a kind of precise protractor similar to those used for astronomical measurements, a type of sextant, the early form which was known as an astrolabe. By using it to find the angle between two surfaces, one can calculate angles with great precision as well as perform reliable approximations of distances. In fact, a similar surveying implement is used even nowadays for most measurements required for mapping. So that's a picture of what it might have looked like, actually. So you see here, we're using math now, right? Is everyone clear on that? You have to know within the 2,000 amos, but there's no way of eyeballing it. So they had a geometrical measuring tool in order to figure out how far they were in order to find out if they're allowed to get off the boat. This comes up nowadays, cruises. Are you allowed to get off a cruise, a 7-day cruise, and we're stopping in? Forget about all like the electronic issues, you know, your ID badge and stuff like that. Forget all that. Just physically, are you allowed to get off the boat? Well, it depends. Where were you when Shabbos started? Were you within Tchum Shabbos, or no? You were somewhere out, and you're pulling in now on Shabbos morning. That would have a major nafkamina based upon this. Interesting. Let me show you another on the same thing about proportions. Look to the, I'm going to skip to the, see in the box, the third one down. Harotze leida kama gov hu shel dekel. What's a dekel? Chever, what's a dekel? Bueller? No? Dekel? What? It's a palm tree. Modei koimaz etzilo. You measure your height and your shadow. And then tzel komos, and you measure the shadow of the palm tree. V'edin yano kama gavoa shel dekel. So you want to know how high the tree is. I apologize for my... Is there a pen here? Here we go. Okay. So here's Jaffe with the yarmulke. And here's Jaffe's shadow. And here's this very long, big palm tree. So you want to know how big it is. You measure your height, and you measure your shadow, and then you figure out the proportion, right? So let's say this is just 2 to 1. Well, then you know where the sun is. Then you go ahead, and there's no way you can measure this huge 40-foot-high palm tree. You measure the shadow, right? And then you fill in the ratio to figure out, again, the height of the palm tree. Is that clear? Yeah? So you're seeing over and over again, the Gemara is using math. Let me give you a few more examples about the travel. Let's go to the next page for a second. This is now Gemara in Erevin, Nun Zayin Amud Aleph. A person gets 2,000 amos, as we said. That's called Yitzchum Shabbos. There's an interesting way of doing this. Imagine you're traveling. And you're getting close to the city, but you're just not there yet. So you're allowed to be Kona Shvisa. You're allowed to set your Shabbos residence by looking at an object in the future that you see coming up. You say, okay, see that palm tree over there? You see that house or something there? In my mind, I'm setting that up as my Shabbos residence, and I get 2,000 amos from that point, even though I'm physically not there. So just to pause for a moment, forget about the halacha, about that. The hashkafa is huge. That you can establish your place of residence based upon where you are in your mind. I'm physically not at that tree. I'm physically very far away from that house. But in my mind, in this works according to halacha, that I could establish it and I get my 2,000 amos, not from where I am now, but from where I am. Because the rule is, chevra, you are where your thoughts are. So I'm sure every one of you is focused right now and your thoughts are here. But if perhaps one of your thoughts right now, you're like off in Honolulu, so physically you're in Honolulu right now. Baal Shem Tov tells a story about two people who are traveling on a train. One person could be in Gan Eden, and one person could be in Gehenna. You are where your thoughts are. So we should always make sure our thoughts put us where in the good places, right? It's important. They tell a story of Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, that after davening was over, he went over to somebody and says, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem, welcome back, how was your trip?" He says, "Rebbe, what are you talking about? I've been here the whole time, I haven't gone anywhere." He goes, no, tell me about the trip, how was the fair? You went to Leipzig, how was it? He says, "Rebbe, what are you talking about? I've been here the whole time." He says, "No, by your Shemona Esrei, in your mind, you were thinking about what it's like at the fair in Leipzig. So I just wanted to know, since that's what you were thinking, that's where you really were. So I'm wishing you Shalom Aleichem. How was it? Tell me how your trip was." It's a totally different way of thinking about things. That we could place ourselves where we want to be. You know there's a halacha. We'll come back to the math in a second. There's a halacha. That a person's supposed to picture themselves before davening Shemona Esrei. You're supposed to imagine yourself at the base of Mikdash. Show of hands. Any of you guys ever heard this before? You're supposed to imagine yourself? No? No? It's a good thing you came today, right? What does that mean? Just put two and two together. If every single Jew is supposed to imagine the time of davening, they're standing at the base of Mikdash. So a Jew here in New Jersey, someone off in California, someone in Australia, someone in Europe. All the Jews, wherever they are, are thinking about being at the place of the Beis Hamikdash, that's Kibbutz Galios. That's Klal Yisrael coming together and davening together. Physically, we're separate. But we understand you are where your thoughts place you. So our thoughts place us in Yerushalayim at the Beis Hamikdash. So let's work this out for a second. I get 2,000 amos from my city. I'm going to show you the diagrams at the bottom for a second. If I have a circular city, see the diagram on the bottom left? I'm going to look up a second. Yeah? So I get my 2,000 amos, but what happens if I have a square city? So you learn about it, I'm assuming the reason why the Caspian comes, you learn about inscribed circles and squares, yes? Yes, I'm getting a few nods. Was this recently or was it like back in October? Recently. Okay, good, good. Yesterday? Oh, good timing. Okay. So, the halacha is that when you extend, let's say I have like a round, I'll do it over here. Here's my city, right? So I'm going to get 2,000 amos. The halacha is that you square off the city. So not only do I get my 2,000 amos, I don't stop here and get the 2,000 amos from this part. I view the city as if it's really a square. And I benefit, and I get all these, and my 2,000 amos really starts from the corner. The imaginary corner, because here's my city ends. Follow that? Yeah. This is, let me show you that's what the Gemara is talking about. These are the diagrams. We're kind of trying to simplify it. Look on the right-hand side for a second. I'm just going to speak out. If I only had the 2,000 amos in a circle, so that's lines A and B and lines A and D, my 2,000 amos. And again, if I was just to draw the arc, that would be my line A and E. But when I square out the city, I really go A to C. So it turns out by squaring this, Tichum gives me 800 extra amos when you do it this way. Right? I think the ratio is 1.4. Tosfos discusses this actually. These are mathematical calculations. That's all for a city. Let's move on a little bit. What time does the period end? Just so I know how much to pace myself. Huh? Okay, thank you. 52? Perfect. Ooh, you're a wise guy, Asaf. Special cheesecake for you, Asaf. Okay, here we go. What if the person is by themselves? So the same discussion about the city applies to the person. This is later on a Mishnah in Erevin. So I'm going to show you. See diagram number 109? Right? So that you get is called agulos. Agulos, you get the whole circle around. That's the opinion of Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos. Chachamim omrim merubaos. I square it out. And look at diagram number 110. You gain the extra square for the person as well, which you're allowed to travel. It says, Kitavla merubaas kidei shehe niskar lezovios. Niskar, what's schar? Schar v'onish, what's schar mean?
Reward.
So you're rewarded, niskar, you're rewarded lezovios with the corners. You gain this, because technically speaking, I should have stopped right here. But you gain, and you get to start kind of like from here. So this, the first way I looked at this was like a whole city. Here now, if you just put a person in the middle, right, that would be how far they're allowed to. It's a machlokis, but we paskin that you don't get just the circle, you get to extend it. So that's the case of inscribing a square, right? And in halacha, it all comes up now, because you know how far you're allowed to travel. This comes up many issues of about walking. Anyone in from Riverdale? Yes, no? No Riverdale people?
I used to live there.
You used to live in Riverdale. Can you walk from Riverdale to Washington Heights? Would that be a problem walk? Not, I'm talking like, you know, like Shabbos halacha. Would that be too far?
Probably not.
Probably not.
There's multiple.
There's
not. There's. I think there's multiple
eruvs,
right?
I'm talking without an eruv. Let's say if I get an eruv, just distance wise, traveling. So because the reason is when you know what distance you're allowed to walk, so that's what comes up from all these halachos. So the answer is yes. If you ever want to walk from, I don't know why you would, but technically, if you want to walk from Riverdale to YU, we would let you do that. But these, I'm just trying to show you guys how the concepts that you're learning about in math have real life applications as well. Okay, how many different domains are there in Shabbos? How many different types of categories of places are there on Shabbos? The easiest one is Rishus HaRabim, right? What's Rishus HaRabim mean? Let's get these down. Rishus HaRabim is a public. What if I spelled it wrong? Public, we have like 600,000 people. What's another domain? You know what Rishus HaYachid is? Private, right? You're not allowed to carry from a Rishus HaYachid into Rishus HaRabim unless there is a Eruv. So that's the second one. Then there's a Carmelis. And the last thing is called a Makom Fatur. I just want to focus on Rishus HaYachid. How do I define something as being a private residence? Well, therefore I'm allowed to carry it. This room obviously is a private residence. Like we said at the beginning, I can carry whatever I want. It's not books. I can carry something in the room. I could pick up a paper, a safer. I could walk around, no problem, which I would not be allowed to do if I was in like an open park where there's no Eruv. But what makes the difference? What do you think defines a Rishut HaYachid?
A fence,
very good. Something that encloses it, correct. Now, how many sides would have to be fenced in order to it to be considered enclosed? Yeah?
Three?
It's like a sukkah.
Isn't
that 2.5? Well, she learned Hilcha Sukkah. She knows I have 2 full walls and a tefach, right? There we come back to our tefach, and a hand's breadth, right? You know, it's like a little hug, you know, 2 walls and a little tefach. You know, you go into sukkah, you feel like God giving you a little hug. That's how it goes, right? So you're right, it's a tefach. But for Hilchus Shabbos, I need 3 walls. I can't use a tefach for that. Right? That's one of the areas on Chalamoid Sukkos where we're more strict, that a sukkah would be considered to be a private domain, Rishus HaYachid, even without a 3rd full wall, whereas normally I need to have 3 walls. What's your name?
Daniel,
okay. What if I'm in like a valley and I have like mountain ranges? Imagine that I'd have not necessarily a fence, like you said, but I have like a slope. I have slope thing in. At what point do I assume that the slope is a wall and I'm enclosed in? At what point I assume, no, it's just like, you know, a little bump in the road, but it's not really, it's all one flat area and I would not be allowed to carry it. At what point, how would you determine on your own to figure out when I'm allowed to consider myself being in an enclosed area? At what point? Yeah.
I assume it has to do with the degrees.
Degrees of? How straight it is. Excellent. Okay, let's go to the next page. My version is a 4 at the bottom. You have this Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Amud Aleph, where the arrow is. What's your name?
Leo.
What's your last name?
Adam.
You're an Adam Saucer? Are you related to other Adam Saucers? That's not just a common last name. You are related. Cousins, brother?
Siblings.
Ashrecha v'tov lach. Leo. Were you born in July? Where does the name Leo come from?
My great-grandfather.
Who's also named Leo? What's your Hebrew name?
Chaim.
Chaim. What?
Were you doing horoscopes?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Leo. No, born in July.
Yeah. No. My brother's name is
July. His name's Leo and he's born in July?
Around then.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Leo, excellent. You got it. I'm just going to show Leo figured out what the Gemara says in Shabbos. Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav. Tail hamislakit. If I have a, what's a tail? Mountain. A sloping mountain, asara, 10 mitoch arba. I have 10 by 4. I don't know what that means exactly. So I turn to the next page. Dun, 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 and I see that the 10 is the height. 10 tefachim tall, within a distance of arba amos. So remind me, here's a quick check for comprehension. We said earlier, dalad amos, how much in modern day feet is dalad amos, according to Moshe Feinstein?
7 feet 3 inches.
So at a distance of 7 feet 3 inches, I go up 10 tefachim. How much is a tefach? Between 3 or 4. So let's say it could be somewhere between 30 inches and 40 inches. If I go 7 feet 3 inches, above in an amount of time of 30 to 40 inches high, that degree, what Leo said, that considered a wall. It's no longer seen to be a thing. If you look, actually, this is taken from the Sefer, the contemporary Eruv. They have the actual... You guys are nice. In one of the other math classes, I forget who it was, the math teacher crossed out the answer and had the kids calculate it themselves. But it says the angle of slope, I'm just reading by the footnote 180, 24.62. So that's the... okay. Let me give you one more fun. There's obviously a lot more examples where math comes up. Let me show you one more topic. This is new. I never did this with the other classes, but something that comes up in terms of a very esoteric concept we really do not have nowadays, but Tuma and Tahara. What's Tuma? Impurity. And Tahara is purity, right? So in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, it was very, very important to know what state a person was. Is were they Tameh? If you say you can't go to the Hamikdash, if you're Tahar, you can go in, right? Things that had to be done in order to purify a person. So there's a Mishnah here in Ohalos which is discussing a case of a log or of a beam that fell that's circular in nature. So just want to give a little background for understanding the case to appreciate how the mathematics comes up in this Mishnah as well. There's something called an ohel, tent, which blocks tumah from spreading. So, for example, if you had a two-story building, and there's a roof here, so whatever tumah would be in this room, let's say, I'm going to use the safer as an example, let's say this is something that's tameh. Okay. If it's in this room, the tumah then spreads directly up, hits the ohel, and is transferred to any other object that's underneath the same ceiling, right? For example, any Kohanim in the room? Saf. Been to any funerals?
No,
Baruch Hashem. This week's Parsha. Parsha's Emor talks that a Kohen has a prohibition of making themselves tummy. So not only can a Kohen not step into a cemetery, they can't go under a tree that has branches in the cemetery and branches outside the cemetery. I used to live in Kew Garden Hills, and there was a cemetery on Main Street that I'll just draw you. Here's my... What's a badge? Here's my tree. Okay, so... Here's the cemetery side. Since the branches extend on both sides, so obviously the Kohen can't walk here, but there's that ohel, there's that overhang, and anywhere that the branches go, the Kohen would not be allowed to walk under that, because the tumah from the corpse comes from this side and carries it over to here. Is that clear? I'm a bad drawer, but you get the middle. Okay. The Mishnah is discussing a case. What if I have an object that is tumah, like a piece of a dead body, and I have a cup or something like that, a coffee cup. I have a bowl. I have a fork. And in those days, in the time when we had the Beis Hamikdash and all these halachos were applying, you couldn't use a fork that was tumah. You couldn't pour, you want to drink your diet snap, you couldn't pour it into a cup that was tumah. So you had to really know. These were things that really, they lived with such a different type of halachic sensibilities in their daily life. So, on the last page, I'll show you the ratio is as follows. I'm going to read the Mishnah at the top. This is Perek Yudbeis, Mishnah Zayin. Amud Shehu Mutal La'avid. You have a pillar or a column that's lying on its side. If you have 24 tefachim on the circumference, then maybe es hatuma tachas dafno. It carries and conducts, it becomes like an ohel. Ve'im lav, if it's smaller than that, tuma bokas va'ola, bokas v'yaretis. Then it just goes straight up and down, and it doesn't really spread. So in the diagrams, in the Bar Tanur here, he just goes through the different ways of calculating how the different levels of... how the levels of tumor are transferred based upon this. Okay. I guess really a takeaway point I just want to kind of point out to you, hopefully it's been clear. And there are many more examples we could talk about in Sukkah, right, about the dimensions, about round and Erev, different types of Erevin cases where these cases come up. I gave you simple examples of a diagram with a square city or a circle. So they have cases where like there's like a rainbow, like the city, you know, looks like a keshes. how do you measure the where you're allowed to travel from. There's many, many different permutations, but I really just want to give like an overview. Simply speaking, the takeaway from the class, hopefully, is that math is applicable. The halacha uses mathematical formulations, calculations, making cheshbonos to things that apply every week. Every week, Shabbos, you have to know what are the ratios and et cetera like that. And some of the comments you did, since you've done the inscribed circles and I wanted to give a few cases like that as well. And really, when we learn general knowledge, I'm a little hesitant to use the word secular knowledge. When we learn general knowledge, it should ultimately appreciate, when we study the creation, it should ultimately lead to appreciation of the Creator. That we understand what a wonderful world HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. Said Rabbi Yudin from Fairlands. I remember when I was in the Shir, he once shared a thought when he was in college. He said, one of his science professors says, look, you guys, wasn't Jewish, you guys are learning the Bible all day and you find God in there. I find God in the microscope and I find God in the telescope. When you look at the world and you appreciate, you have a broad perspective, we're able to understand and incorporate the different things that you're learning in your classes and see how it makes one comprehensive unit and understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's universe, it should only lead to an enhancement of Torah, an enhancement of mitzvahs, an enhancement of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So hopefully by taking a few math examples and showing how the Gemara uses these, the Talmud uses, the Halacha uses all these things, hopefully at the end of the day that will lead to an enhanced appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You guys were a great audience. Have a great day. Y'all need to clap. Do you have lunch now? You have lunch? You want to go take lunch? And I ended early, right?
Yeah.
Go. It's on me. Go get lunch. Okay, take care.